We're here with Robert Miller in the WGXC Acra studio, and Robert has just put together a show called The Black Chronicle. Robert, do you want to tell us what that is?
The Black Chronicle is a journalistic presentation of African-American history that is published in the form of 14 tabloid newspapers, each one dated at a key or turning point in African-American history. It begins in the American Revolution, and our program focuses and takes advantage of that first issue and goes up through the Civil Rights era in the 1950s. In each of the issues of the Black Chronicle, we've taken a key event in African-American history, and we've used it as the lead story in a four-page tabloid newspaper that we then build around the lead story using features, news articles, advertisements, political cartoons, social notices, everything and anything. So we, in effect, create what I think of as a multifaceted moment in history. And the Black Chronicle publication reflects in its design and also in its writing style the designs and writing styles of the broadsheets or the newspapers of the historical period. Now, what we've done in today's show, or in the show that we're broadcasting, is we've looked at the first issue, 1778, and we've looked at the Rhode Island Assembly's decision to offer African slaves their freedom in exchange for fighting for the Rhode Island militia. Now, this was a highly controversial bit of legislation, but at this point in the war, it was necessary because it was a desperate need of manpower. And we see throughout the Black Chronicle that African Americans were called into service for precisely that reason. They acquitted themselves brilliantly. And there were advantages or advances that normally followed the wars. It happened in the American Revolution. It happened, God knows, in the Civil War, in the First World War, in the Second World War. And so what we've done in the program is we've taken some advertisements. We've taken the lead story about the Rhode Island Assembly, and we have a short 5 or 6 minute drama in which we listened to some of the arguments back and forth in the assembly for and against offering African Americans their freedom. That period of time obviously was a fascinating one, because the question of freedom on the one hand for the 13 colonies and the ownership of human beings as property on the other were inevitably coming into conflict. And for example, Thomas Jefferson actually drafted, despite his kind of up and down history when it comes to owning and treating his African slaves, he actually drafted a clause for the Declaration of Independence condemning George III for promoting the slave trade. But that clause was blocked by Southern delegates to the convention, and in any case, our program today is runs about 27 minutes. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's a good, a really good example of what the Black Chronicle does. Tom, I can tell you a little bit about how I developed it and why.
Sure,
if you're interested. Until recently, I was working for Channel 13. In New York City. That's the flagship public television station in New York. And I was director of educational publishing. I worked with all of the great television producers, Bill Moyers, Rick Burns, David Gruben. And what I did was I developed education materials for use in schools and colleges, churches, synagogues, mosques, so that educators could use the programs in their classes. And so I had a marvelous career at WNET. But when I when I retired 3 or 4 years ago, I went back to the two projects that had kind of set me on the path of educational publishing. And the first was The Black Chronicle. When I was 28 years old, I was an actor, and I had an idea. This was in the late 1960s, and I was in a play called Riot. It was a play that the theater company that I belonged to created. We were called the Ohm Theater Workshop. And it was based on the riots that were happening in the late 60s. The play began with a panel discussion between a white moderate, that was me, a white conservative, kind of a Rush Limbaugh type, a black militant, and a black moderate. And the panel discussion was supposed to be about finding a solution to the issues of race relations. It will give you some idea of the perspective of the producers that the discussion broke up into a fist fight. But during the discussion, the audience found themselves surrounded by people in black leotards doing slow motion gestures that we as dancers and actors had taken from the scenes of the riots in the 1960s. There was frisking and being frisked. Two actors would kind of slowly go into the being frisked position and the frisking position. There was clubbing and being clubbed. And these slow motion kind of black clad figures doing these gestures throughout the audience gradually increased in intensity until when the panel discussion broke into a fist fight, the entire theater space became a riot under strobe with burning tires and sirens. It was quite remarkable. In fact, the play won an Obie Award. We presented it off Broadway. Well, at that time, when I was in the play Riot, I was also writing for an education magazine called Colloquy. And my focus was on the failure of American education, especially in the area of celebrating the contributions of minorities. And at the time, of course, black history was one of the flags that was raised by those of us in the 60s who were protesting, rebelling, whatever you want to call it. Well, the play was successful on the one hand, critically successful, but unfortunately, we opened on the same day of a citywide newspaper strike, and all of the good reviews were read by nobody except us. So the play closed, and I had gotten an idea when I was interviewing someone for one of my articles on the teaching of American history, and the idea was to present African American history using the format of a series of newspapers, tabloid newspapers. I thought it was a great idea because newspapers use the kind of appeal of headlines and attractive writing, engaging writing, to deliver information. And it was a natural to me. It was something that I decided that I would give a try. I would give it a try. Now here we are. What is it? 50 years later, and I'm kind of asking myself the question: How could I as a white guy take it upon myself to do a project like this? And all I can say is, when I think back on it, is that this was a time of turmoil, the late 60s. We all believed, I remember it as crystal clear, that the world was changing for the better, that things were going to be different. And I had an idea that I thought would change education. And so as a member of what we thought of ourselves as the generation of change, I decided to give it a try. I had no money, so I lived on a houseboat for a year on the 79th Street Pier in Manhattan, and every day I went back and forth to the Schomburg collection of the New York Public Library, which is one of the best collections of African-American history in the world, to create a prototype issue. And the one that I chose the lead story that I chose was the Dred Scott decision. And the reason I chose that was because it was just before the Civil War. The country was split down the middle. And frankly, it felt like the country was kind of echoing that in the late 60s. And so that it seemed like a good place to start. And so I created and wrote this four-page newspaper. I had great research. I had the old newspapers of the period, the abolitionist newspapers, both black and white abolitionist newspapers. And then I also had the best secondary sources, Lerone Bennett, Benjamin Quarles, C. Van Woodward, John Hope Franklin. And I structured the issue so it was historically complete. It gave a spectrum, a feeling for that period. And I used the original documents as a way of kind of launching myself into articles that I thought would be appealing. Well, at the end of a year, I had an issue. I had a full four-page issue, and I thought I could get it published easily. In fact, I thought it was going to change the world. But I couldn't get anywhere. It was I was white. I didn't have a track record. But I was very lucky because I found Blackside and Henry Hampton. Blackside is the company that you'll maybe be familiar with because they eventually produced Eyes on the Prize, the Pulitzer-winning civil rights public television series. And I'd gone to school with one of Henry Hampton, who was the founder and the president, with one of his close colleagues. His name was Howard Damond, and he introduced me to Henry, and Henry saw the idea, and he said, "Rob, I'm going to give you a home to do this. I think it's a great idea." Because Henry and Blackside, they were interested in social justice, and they welcomed anyone of any race who had an idea that they felt was worthwhile. And so they gave me a home in Roxbury to develop the Black Chronicle. And 2 years later, we had a contract with Holt Reinhardt and Winston, the publisher. And I had done 14 issues of the Black Chronicle, a teacher's guide with 14 chapters, two LP records. We had LP records at the time with dramatic kind of short dramas for each of the 14 issues, and 14 overhead transparencies. And this was organized into a school package that Holt Reinhardt and Winston began to sell. It was a triumph for all of us. I then went on to another project called La Cronica. It was funded in part by the Ford Foundation, and that was Mexican-American history. I went out to California. First, I went to Mexico to do some preliminary research. Then I came back, and with a small group of writers and historians in Los Angeles and a large group of researchers throughout the Southwest, we created La Cronica, which is bilingual, and it presents Mexican-American history using the same format, except each of the nine issues are four pages of English and four pages of Spanish. And La Cronica is fascinating because it begins in 1835 when the Southwest, California, New Mexico, Arizona, they were all part of northern Mexico, and it was a serene time. Unlike the Black Chronicle, which began in the middle of the Revolutionary War, the turmoil. But now that both La Cronica and Black Chronicle are being distributed by myself on my website, which is ourhistoryasnews.org. And so, Tom, that's kind of the story.
What was it like trying, what was your approach, I guess, to turning stories from a newspaper based in a time before radio into radio stories?
Good question. Well, we're lucky enough to have the dramatic episodes for each of the issues. The one that I mentioned for issue one, our first of what we all hope will be many, is again the dramatized version of the Rhode Island Assembly's debate over whether or not to permit slaves to fight for their freedom. So I present a kind of you are their introduction. It's 1878, winter, the war is raging, the colonial armies are lacking manpower. General Washington recently changed his stance on whether to offer slaves their freedom in exchange for fighting for the colonial armies. Let's listen in to the Rhode Island Assembly as it debates the issue. Something like that's how it begins. And then we listen to the debate, and then we go on and read myself, Philip Grant, Mark Bailey, Donna Ramirez. We read articles with kind of short descriptions before each to give a sense of that period.
And these are all local people?
Phil Grant is a news
on WGXC,
GXC. Mark Bailey is connected with GSC. Donna Ramirez is a painter in this area, and me. And I am bringing Black Chronicle and La Chronica to schools, and I give workshops. In fact, we're planning a workshop at the Riverside Church in New York City in the fall that we're calling Black Lives Have Always Mattered. And what we're looking at is the way the ongoing incidents of violence and oppression against African Americans have been met by powerful and brilliant and effective responses by African Americans, by African American leaders, and by what we call the Rainbow Community, which would include me. And we'll begin with the late 1800s with Plessy versus Ferguson, and we'll go from there to the Niagara Movement, W.E.B. Du Bois and William Monroe Trotter, and we'll go up through the First World War and the Red Summer and up through the Civil Rights era and the Montgomery bus boycott, which is the lead story in the last issue of Black Chronicle. And we've got there's kind of martial colonial era music along with the 27-minute piece, and I think it worked out really well.
And if you just tuned in, we're talking to Robert Miller, who puts together the Black Chronicle newspaper and has just turned it into a radio story that's now on WGXC and available in the WGXC archives to listen to. And you're making subsequent episodes?
Well, we're hoping to. This is the first of what we hope will be more. I think we now have a template that we can use for subsequent programs. Our hope is that we can do Black Chronicle issues and then move on to La Chronica, which again is Mexican American history from the early 1800s up through the civil rights movement in the late 1960s, the Chicano movement.
And have you, in the course of all the research, found anything local? Is there local history included?
Well, W.E.B. Du Bois was brought up not far from here in Massachusetts. His house is a historical landmark, and I believe Harriet Tubman settled in New York State. And of course we have a lot of homes that still boast basements that were used as part of the Underground Railroad. So there's a great history.
That was mostly more to the west, up through Rochester and Syracuse?
Mm-hmm. Right. We have them not far from us in Middleburg and Caro. And there's a long and honorable history of anti-slavery activity in upstate New York. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I developed the Black Chronicle and La Chronica as much or maybe more for the white community than I did for the African American or the Hispanic community, because I think it's the white community that really needs to know this stuff. It enriches all of our history.
And if people want to find out more information, they should go to ourhistoryisnews.org?
That's it, ourhistoryisnews.org.
All right. Thank you, Robert Miller, for joining us today.
Tom, it's my pleasure.
And you can tune in the Black Chronicle on WGXC.org on the website in the archives.